This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Division 3 podcast. I am Inside Lacrosse Editor-in-Chief Matt Kinnear, joined by Josh Davey. We're actually recording from about 30 miles apart right now. I'm off my home in Bel Air. Josh is down in the Baltimore offices. Josh, you started hot this morning, sending me a picture of your Lynchburg days over our Slack message, just kind of reliving the glory days, huh?
It may or may not have been an accident. I won't disclose that information. I was sent a picture from a photographer from school recently, just like, hey, miss you, man, look at these pictures. And it was pre-ACL tear. So any chance to get an opportunity to accidentally or purposefully share the pictures with me pre-Donjoy, I got to take advantage of it. So, yeah, we started out hot this morning. Going to keep the hot streak going through this D3 podcast today, man. I'm fired up.
Pre-ACL Josh was a thing to see. So if you guys haven't had the privilege of seeing that, check the internet archives and look for number 5 for Lynchburg. Josh, we do keep it hot. We have Coach Mikey Thompson from Christopher Newport joining us on the podcast to end this edition. The CAC tournament is this weekend. They play Mary Washington, but there's a lot to discuss, including last night's, I'd say, biggest result from last night, maybe outside the NESCAC, and that's Dickinson 11, Franklin and Marshall 9. Josh, when you look at this game, what is kind of the thing that sticks out to you? Why did Dickinson get this win?
Yeah, I think a handful of things. You know, what's interesting when you look at the box score is, you know, we've talked about Dylan Mayer numerous times in this podcast and how he's, you know, possibly in running for player of the year, possibly running for player of the year of the Centennial Conference. He's held without a point. So when you look at that and you're not looking at the score, you think, oh, F&M must have rolled during this game. Cole Pelicano in goal for the Red Devils makes 21 saves. And you know, it's sort of that method, right? You're talking about like playing the Cavaliers, like, all right, we're not going to let LeBron beat us. We're going to let everyone else beat us. Everyone else beat the Diplomats today for Dickinson. Jack O'Connell, 3-1 for 4 points. Tyler Strods, 3 goals. Tucker Carney, 2 goals. You know, we talk about this Dickinson team, and they're so senior heavy. Their top 3 leading scorers are all seniors. You know, so this isn't their first rodeo by any means. And Coach Webster is one of the best coaches in Division III Lacrosse. And, you know, Centennial Conference, these guys are battle tested. You know, it's arguably one of the best conferences, probably the second best conference for the NESCAC. In Division III, and you got to bring it every night. And when someone's making 21 saves, I don't care who you're playing, it's going to be difficult to pull the W. So this is a big momentum win for the Red Devils. You know, F&M, you know, they're going to be more than fine. I would imagine that they I'm actually not sure. I'm sure we'll get into it, actually, how their conference tournament breaks out. But I would imagine they're probably still the number one seed, or at least in contention for it. So definitely a big win, momentum boost for the Red Devils. And just another day in the life, right? That hashtag D3 life we're talking about is – it's going to be interesting moving forward, but got to give credit where credit's due. Dickinson came ready to go, and they got the win.
Obviously, the goalie is the thing that jumps off the page. You know, having 21 saves is just an incredible day. But a few other things that I want to point out here. I watched, you know, some of the highlight package, and Charlie DeMuth. It might be DeMuth, but Charlie DeMuth, 4 ground balls, 3 calls turnovers, a midfielder for Dickinson. Just a great transition player. Really disruptive, kind of causing havoc. Play between the lines in general seemed to go the way of Dickinson in this one. You know, they outground balled 39-25 in this one. In the second half, they had 24 ground balls where Franklin and Marshall only had 13. You know, that's just a stat that if you win that, you know, it's not always indicative of necessarily the effort or anything else, but you want to win the ground ball stat. They did. I think they played better in between the lines, and that's a big reason for this win. With F&M, kind of like we said with Dickinson, you know, they were able to spread out the offense and have multiple contributors. You know, F&M did have a few goal scorers, but Kevin Mollahan, 4 goals and 2 assists, continuing to be a standout player, but you just wonder, you know, is too much going to be going through him? Are teams going to be able to focus on him, and do you need scoring to come from some other places to kind of get through this gauntlet of a conference tournament that's coming up?
Yeah, and you know, they obviously have Sean Rogers, who's the reigning conference player of the year, who you know, is still producing for them. You know, by no means is he, you know, not getting what he needs with 63 points on the season. You know, the combination of Rogers and Mollahan is one of the deadliest in Division III. So, but you know, and Luke Keating, a midfielder, a freshman, also has 60 points. So, you know, between those three, it drops off, right? It goes 69, 63, 60 in terms of points. Next one is 29. Not to say that's not a formula for success when you have three players who have over 60 points as we're heading into May. But they definitely need a little bit more, right? When guys can key on those three players, you know, it makes it a little more easy to scout. And especially this late, I mean, teams have so much film. Right, I mean, they have so much film on these teams, and you know, as they're going to start going to get into playing some of these teams for a second time, it makes it that much harder as well. So, really looking forward to, you know, seeing how FNM can continue to, you know, shake things up on the offensive side. You know, count on those big three, but who's going to step up for them and give them the production when one of them might not be pulling their weight?
Playing a team for the second time, especially in a span of just a few weeks, is something that I talked with Coach Thompson. In the interview at the end of this podcast, he has some unique perspective. They play Mary Washington in the CAC tournament this weekend. I'm sure they are hydrating ahead of time with some Trimeno, like you are, Josh. We just got a huge case of Trimeno into our office, and everyone basically raided our fridge as soon as it came in.
Yeah, I remember walking over. When it came, I was actually in a meeting, and I stepped out of the meeting. And Mark Dixon was recording a podcast with Dan Flynn, and I know how Mark has been. Dixie's been just—he's just been earning for it. He just wants it so badly. So I put it over my head and I carried it. And I interrupted their podcast and hand delivered it to him. So yeah, we have some in the fridge. The fridge is already almost gone. We have luckily they sent us our friends at Trimeno sent us a lot. So we have some more stacked up next to the fridge, ready to get cooled in there. So yeah, it's going fast. I know the people outside of the office. You know, Kyle Devitt. He's like, hey, make sure you put some aside for me. So it's going fast. And what's cool is see a lot of our listeners. To the podcast, you know, tweeting, talking about how they're enjoying it as well. So it really is an awesome product, and it's something that we are constantly using and sometimes fighting for in the IL office.
Trimeno protein-infused water. It has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. It's ideal before, during, or after your workout. Josh, I'm sure you're going to have some before your big game tonight, coaching for Park School. Hydrate with a beverage as versatile as you are. Play hard, not hungry. Josh, I personally love the strawberry lemonade flavor. What's your favorite?
I love peach, and then some of these new flavors. I'm sitting here at my desk right now with a full bottle of Orchard ready to go too, which is delicious. So always good to put something healthy, a little protein. I will definitely have a bottle or two ready to go pregame before our 4:15 faceoff this afternoon, no doubt.
You can order yourself a case at Amazon.com or go to CVS. Protein never tasted so good. Josh, continuing along conference tournament play, next two weekends, that's what it's all about. We have the ODAC is the next one that we're going to be looking at. Still a little bit undecided, but we know some stuff that's going on with the ODAC. WNL is going to be the top seed in the tournament, and that's the only seeding that's kind of solidified right now. What's your gauge of the rest of the conference?
Yeah, so it's sort of a who's beat who, right? Roanoke lost to Hampden-Sydney. Lynchburg lost to Roanoke. And Hampden-Sydney plays Lynchburg this weekend in a big one. So if the Tigers are able to beat the Hornets this weekend, Hampden-Sydney solidifies the 2 seed, in which Roanoke would be the 3 and Lynchburg would be the 4. Like you said, regardless, WNL is hosting. So yeah, it's really going to be interesting. Those are sort of the, you know, the 4 big boys who beat up on each other. Randolph-Macon and Guilford will be the next 2. It's cool to see Guilford in there, a team that isn't as used to making it into the tournament. You know, it's usually been a Virginia Wesleyan or someone else. So it's good to see them in there. They're playing well. They actually played Washington Elite last night and were up after the first quarter. A few goals ended up being a 5-goal game, a 13-8 final in favor of the Generals. But you know, they're right in the mix. They're making things difficult. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. The Lynchburg Hampden Sydney game sort of will set the tone for this weekend. If Lynchburg wins, which I expect them to, was getting chirped by a couple Hampden Sydney alums this week, Tommy Costanza being one of them. But I think Lynchburg pulls this one out this weekend, and I'm not exactly sure how the seeding goes. Everyone will be tied at that point, so I'm not sure if it's a goal differential, if they're going to take the NESCAC approach and it's a pull names out of a hat. So it'll be interesting to see, especially if Lynchburg wins. It's going to get real hairy down there in the ODAC to see how these seeds are falling and who's playing who in the first and second rounds. And for some of these teams, you know, specifically those three, Hampden-Sydney, Roanoke, Lynchburg, you know, they need another win or two or three here to, you know, even have a chance at even talking about, you know, an at-large bid, you know, not getting the conference tournament bid. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. But, yeah, WNL certainly has an advantage being able to host the tournament starting this weekend. Or next weekend, I'm sorry.
You know, love to see that where all the teams were on any given Saturday, any given Tuesday, any given Wednesday, these teams can beat each other. You know, you kind of just love to see that, you know, all the teams having the same record just because it means it's competitive, it's fun, it's exciting. It's not just, you know, going to be chalk the whole way through. Love the way that the ODAC is breaking down. And you mentioned the NESCAC. You know, the other day, Ken Stockman, you know, shout out on Twitter, Longstick33, he tweeted out that, you know, if the favorites in the NESCAC win, the tiebreaker will be pulling a name out of a hat. I thought he was joking, and I actually sent him a message to say, is that like a legitimate thing you're saying, or are you just, you know, making a joke that I couldn't tell if it was sarcastic or not? No, that's the truth. The NESCAC, you know, because of the way that the teams all ended up tied and the tiebreaker scenarios, they had to go down to the scenario where they essentially pull names out of a hat. So that's exactly what they did. Wesleyan was the first team pulled, so they're the number one seed and home field advantage. Amherst, the number two seed, and Tufts kind of got the short straw with being the third team picked out of the hat. Those are the top three teams in the league, all with identical 9-1 records in the conference. But you look at it, what is Wesleyan's kind of gift for being the first name pulled out of the hat? They get to host Bates, which isn't exactly, you know, a cakewalk for anyone. So the NESCAC is just absolutely insane. It's hilarious that that's how they determine the seeding, but I don't think you really care that much besides just the home field advantage aspect of it, because any team can really take down any team in this conference.
Yeah, I think you want to talk about D3 life. There's nothing more D3 life than picking a name out of a hat to set the seedings for your conference tournament. But I agree, you know, I don't think Tufts is, you know, other than the disappointment of not being the number one seed, after that, I think it's probably all gravy to them. They're going to play whoever they want to play, as the same situation with Amherst. You know, there probably might be a team or two you might want to not want to play more than the other. But even like me, I think I'm looking at it, you know, Tufts plays Middlebury, Amherst plays Bowdoin. I would rather play Middlebury than Bowdoin, I think, at this point. So it really doesn't matter at this point because, like we said, once you get into late April, May, everyone's playing each other for the second time. There's so much scouting report. It makes every game that much harder, especially when you're talking about the best conference in Division III lacrosse. So really interested to see how this one shakes out. I think regardless, those top three seeds are all going to make the NCAA tournament, regardless who wins between Wesleyan and Amherst Tufts. And who knows, it could be a Bates, Bowdoin, Middlebury, Williams-Comp College. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's some upsets that we might not be predicting right now, but those three for sure, Wesleyan, Amherst, Tufts will be in regardless. So really interested to see how this one shakes out, and love the fact that it was decided by pulling names out of a hat. I absolutely love that.
My prediction for this conference is it's going to go against kind of what I said the past 2 weeks, but I think Amherst is going to win the NESCAC. I still am picking Tufts to win the national championship. I know that doesn't necessarily make any sense, but that's what I'm going with. Amherst, it's a tough matchup that they have against Bowdoin. You know, this was a 16-15 game back in March, a really tough stretch that Amherst had that kind of kicked off, you know, a lot of success. You know, they played Bowdoin, then they played Denison, then they had a loss to RIT. I think that they're going to kind of get punched in the face a little bit early in this game, but then they're going to win the NESCAC tournament. I just think Tufts is going to fall in this tournament, but regroup and really make a run in May. Any thoughts on who's winning this one, Josh?
Yeah, you know, I think there's certainly an advantage to, you know, being the number one seed, but I think at the same time, Wesleyan runs that backer zone and, you know, giving more teams more time to prepare for you know, that zone. Is an advantage for the other teams, you know? So I think I would agree with you. I don't think Wesleyan wins it. I think it's going to be Amherst or Tufts. I'm going to put my money on Tufts. I think that they love the battle-tested road, and they prefer that. You know, I think they're the kind of team that's like, we'll play anyone, anywhere, anytime. So I think Tufts is the one who pulls it. I think they have a little chip on their shoulder, probably a little bit salty. Like I said, probably actually don't really care that they're number three seed. They'll play anyone anywhere. But I think Tufts wins the NESCAC tournament this year and keeps it rolling, like you said, all the way through championship weekend.
A few conferences just worth mentioning. The Liberty League, they finished up the regular season. Remember, this is an expanded tournament. They have a 6-team tournament field this year. RIT, the number one seed, the undisputed number one team in the land. They will have a bye. So will RPEI, the number two seed in this tournament. Ithaca versus Clarkson, St. Lawrence versus Union. I'm really eager to see what Ithaca or St. Lawrence can do in this tournament. You know, if they can steal a win, if they can go through and knock off RIT or RPEI in this one. But either way, this should be a two-bid league to the NCAA tournament. It's just a matter of outside of RIT who kind of finds some success here in the tournament. Then looking at the Empire 8, Stevens is the top seed in the conference tournament. That's really the only thing that's decided from a seeding aspect of this one. The last spot is to be decided. D3 fans are going to want to watch this one because Stevens is going to be an NCAA tournament team. This is one of those conferences where there's potential for a bid thief to kind of make the bubble even shorter here. So keep an eye on the Empire 8. Josh, we have Coach Mikey Thompson on here after this. The CAC tournament, it starts this weekend. They play Mary Washington. We have York, the number one seed with a bye. Salisbury, the number two seed with a bye. And then the other game in this one is Frostburg versus Southern Virginia. Do you have any major predictions on this one? I think most people are going to say it's between York or Salisbury. First time around, we saw York just dominate Salisbury. I certainly don't expect that to happen again. But I'm not exactly 100% on my prediction going forward of who's actually going to win this conference tournament.
Yeah, I think York is just they're too good right now. I think that they are in their stride. I think they win this conference tournament. I think where it gets really interesting is I think CNU handles Mary Washington fine. Nothing against Frostburg or Southern Virginia, but the winner of that game, we'll play York, and I expect York to handle both those teams. So I think where it really gets interesting is, CNU beats Mary Washington, and then they go to Salisbury. You know, that was a 6-5 game earlier this season. I know you mentioned you chat with Coach Thompson later in this interview or in this podcast, but this CNU team is one that is looking to be sort of, validated as a top team. You know, they've been ranked throughout the entire season. They have a few big wins against, some very good teams, but a couple of them are just sort of right there, a couple short, one or two goal losses to Roanoke. Like I mentioned, the one goal loss to Salisbury, they're right in the mix of talking about being, one of the best teams in the country. I think this is the game where they, sort of push through, break the ceiling, right? As we talk about with on the women's side with Boston College, they sort of break through the glass ceiling. I think they beat Salisbury. And then we have a York CNU final and York continues to sort of cruise. But I think this is a big win for CNU. And if CNU beats Salisbury, you got to talk about this being a three teams from the CAC getting into the NCAA tournament as well. So especially if CNU beats Salisbury. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out. But if I had to give you my prediction, I think it's a York CNU championship and York takes the crown.
Very interesting. What I'm thinking is that CNU is going to play Salisbury very tight in a very physical, low scoring game, but Salisbury is going to win. Salisbury is going to be tired, emotionally drained, go into York, play them tough. It's going to be another low-scoring game, maybe an overtime game. I see York winning maybe 9-8 in overtime, winning the CAC tournament championship.
Let me ask you this. If Salisbury were to lose this game to CNU, does Salisbury get into the tournament without the AQ? With losses to Gettysburg, Ohio Wesleyan, York, and then would be CNU. Four losses. They would be 14-4.
I think they do get in. would beware of what happens in other conferences. You know, if something crazy happens in Empire 8, they certainly should not feel confident on Selection Sunday. But I would think that they would get in that scenario.
It's interesting because, you know, you have teams that have struggled. Rice Stevenson should win their conference tournament. But, you know, the ODAC has been a two-bid league for a long time, even a three-bid league, I believe, last year or the year before. So that there might only be one team from the ODAC getting in, which would help Salisbury, obviously. I think they get in, too, but it definitely makes the conversation interesting. Like you said, if there are some sort of bid thieves out there and some of the expected champions, tournament champions don't, you know, take the crown, I think it could really get interesting and definitely you know, I think for the past 20 years, you know, I'm sure the Seagulls have watched the selection show without sweating at all. And if they do lose to CNU, you know, they might be might have to bring some towels. They might be sweating a little more than they ever have. So it's definitely going to be interesting.
And we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but we'll talk about this after Selection Sunday. I mean, this might set up where Salisbury. There's going to be a team that has to play Salisbury earlier than they would hope in the NCAA tournament because of where Salisbury ends up. So even if, you know, they're a four-loss Salisbury team, you don't want to play them in the NCAA tournament. So that's going to be just interesting how the dynamic of this tournament changes with where they are placed if they make it. So lots to watch, you know, this weekend, starting with the CAC and some other conferences and moving into Selection Sunday. We're really just about 12 days away here from Selection Sunday, and that's when the real fun happens.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, hang around. We have Coach Mikey Thompson, Christopher Newport University, a great interview talking about his team, the upcoming CAC tournament, some of his coaching influences, and how he is building this team into a national power. Listen right now. Coach, you guys are 13-3 heading into the CAC tournament first round this weekend. How are you feeling about your team right now?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Really excited about this group. It's been a really good mix of some young, talented players and some seniors in important roles that have done a really nice job. You know, just having two captains that are D-middies and then really strong at the face-off X with Tony Cruz and, you know, senior attackman Matt Chris, who, you know, is the points leader for our entire program. You know, just guys like that that have stepped in and had really good seniors and been really good leaders and mentors for our big freshman classes. It's just been cool to see how it's all come together.
Yeah, Coach, this really is a special season. You guys started with, it looks like 9 games in a row. Now you're 13-3. Your 3 losses are against some really good competition. What would you say has kind of been the difference maker for you guys this season?
I think that, you know, most importantly, we've just been really consistent. We've been really consistent in practice and, consistent on game day too. And I think that starts with the seniors. The big question mark, you know, we knew we had some talented freshmen coming in, but you never know, you know, how quickly they're going to pick things up. And just kind of the culture of the program and how the seniors have showed up every day in practice, I think has helped move some of those guys along in the right direction. And yeah, I mean, I think we just, more so than in the past, we kind of know what we're going to get on game day. And again, I think that's just a credit to how much work the seniors have put in and all that they've done from just a team cultural standpoint. So, yeah, it's been, we played a lot of good teams and, you know, the teams that we've ended up losing to, I feel like we've played better than we have in the past. And I feel like we're definitely closing the gap on some of those top programs. So I know that it's been a really fun year for all of us.
You talk about consistency and that's the really difficult thing. And that's what separates the average to above average programs from a great program. You know, you guys have beaten Salisbury before, but maybe just not had that consistent throughout a season effort like you guys have had this year. What are some of those bigger picture things, the kind of cornerstones that you build this program around, the cultural things that kind of elevate this program to where it's at right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's as much stuff on the field, or I'm sorry, off the field as it is on the field. I mean, just making sure that guys are always doing the right things, you know, off the field to set themselves up for success on the field. And, you know, culture building takes a little bit of time, obviously. We're still a young program. I mean, we just finished our 10th year as a program. So we are young, and I think it all started with that culture building. And now I just feel so strongly about the upperclassmen that we do have in our program and all the hard work that they've put in. And now that we've, you know, really been able to turn to our recruiting to not only recruit kind of that next level of talent, but also, you know, that same high character type kid that wants to work hard, and the kids that, you know, have that growth mindset that that you need to be successful, is kind of where we're at right now. So again, it's just a credit to some of these upperclassmen and all the hard work that they've put in. And, you know, this is basically technically my first real recruiting class as a head coach, is these freshmen this year. And, you know, you got to realize that those guys come in and they don't know any better. So if you have the seniors in place that are doing all the right things, that's what those guys are going to do. And, you know, it's really, really fun to think about, you know, kind of where we're going to be in the next few years when some of these really talented players are upperclassmen and hopefully, you know, learning and continuing to do the things that they've learned as freshmen.
You know, you've been with Christopher Newport as an assistant, but still fairly new on the job in terms of head coach, just a few years in. How does it get any easier? How does it get any more difficult? What's the level of, I guess, just overall comfort with being a head coach that you've developed and able to kind of grow into your voice as a head coach here?
Yeah, it's been a really good place for me. Obviously, I finished at Virginia in 2010 as a player, and then coached there for 1 year in 2011. And I had a pretty good idea that I wanted to stay into coaching. You know, I've always been really into education and coaching, and you know, my dad's a counselor, so I think that has, you know, a little bit to do with just, you know, helping kids and helping people. And and so it's been a really good place for me. I know that right out of college, I was kind of looking around at some different places that I could coach. And I love the beach. So the first thing I looked at, you know, after that was, you know, where can I go coach at the beach? And there was an opening here at CNU. And, you know, throughout my time as an assistant, I just saw that this place had such a high ceiling. It's such a great school, and it's in a really cool place. The athletic department here is really, really strong. I think last year, CNU won 14 out of the 19 CAC championships. So there's obviously a super high ceiling here at CNU. And I think with some consistency and just continuing to do the right things and work hard, there's no reason that we can't continue to grow as a program. But you know, in terms of if it gets any easier, I don't think it gets any easier. You know, my first year when I was an interim head coach, that was 2016, I guess. We had a really, you know, a strong season that year. You know, the better you get, the target's more on your back, and your own expectations and your players' expectations get higher. But that's definitely not something that we shy away from. We don't really want it to get any easier. You know, I think the fact that we get to play teams like Salisbury and York in our conference every year, I mean, that makes it really fun, because, you know, if you want to be a top 10 program on a consistent level like we do, you know that you get to play teams that are pretty consistently in the top 10, and, you know, you got to recruit kids that can play at that level, and you got to do all the things off the field and on the field that are going to put you at that level as well. So yeah, it's just been really exciting to see how far this school has come and how far our program has come in a pretty short amount of time.
You talked about a few of the guys already, you know, strong face-off specialist, great short stick, D middies. Who are some of the guys that people listening to this podcast should know heading into the CAC tournament?
I think it starts with Matt Chris. Matt is, like I said, he's our program's all-time leads our program in points. And you know, based on how strong the conference has been with attackmen the past few years, Matt's never even been an all-conference attackman, but he's been a starter since his freshman year, and he's just been such a good player for us. He's not, you know, the most vocal leader, but he always leads with his play on the field, and he's put together a really, really nice senior season. I think he's at the top, towards the top of the conference right now with points. So he's, you know, he's been a great contributor to our offense, especially with some of the younger guys. Some of the freshmen that I mentioned, Dylan Rice, I think he's at the top of the conference with goals right now as a freshman. You know, Max Wayne is a freshman. He's been our number one cover guy at close D. Phoenix Hines is an LSM who's been starting for us. And then two of our three guys running on that first midfield are freshmen as well, Will Stockhausen and Jackson Deal. So a lot of young guys that I think are going to become household names by the time they're done here on campus. Scott McEnany is our sophomore goalie who's been playing really, really well down the stretch. We've been bouncing back and forth a little bit in the middle of the season, but he's been playing great and kind of using experience to help him out. And then a couple guys at close D, two juniors, Drew Cornell and Will Kogan, have helped quarterback our defense, and I've been really, really happy with how our defense has been playing recently.
The CAC tournament, you guys play on Saturday, 2 p.m. against Mary Washington. This is a game that you guys played only a few weeks ago, an 8-5 win against Mary Washington. People can catch this live stream on your website. What do you guys have to do to be successful in this tournament? And what is it like just playing a team twice in such a short time frame? How does that change the nature of the game and what you guys might do?
Yeah, I mean, just historically, I think that seeing you and Mary Washington has had a bit of a rivalry. So it's definitely a game that that will garner our attention, and it's going to make for a really fun home atmosphere on Saturday. You know, I think that just the nature of the season, so many things change for better or for worse throughout the season, and you have to just keep, you know, continuing to harp on your guys, telling them to just keep getting better. I mean, that's really all it comes down to. Is no matter if you're winning or you're losing, there's always going to be things that you can do a little bit better. And then at this time in the year too, I think that you need your seniors to step up and realize that, you know, it's getting to be towards the end of their road there. You know, I think with this game on Saturday, I mean, I think that we've had a little bit of rest, you know, towards the end of our season here, but we've been getting after to practice a little bit and making sure that, you know, we're focusing on ourselves. And I think when we play our game and we focus on the things that we can control, that's when we play at our best. So, you know, the nature of the playoffs and conference games is you're going to know the opponent really, really well at this time of year. And, you know, obviously those are things that you need to focus on a little bit, but at the end of the day, you got to, you know, pick up round balls, and you've got to clear your hands, and you got to shoot well, and you got to make saves, and you got to communicate, and all that kind of stuff isn't really going to change based on your opponent.
You touched on this a little bit, but the CAC, one of the great conferences in Division III lacrosse. Obviously, you have Salisbury and York, you guys. But how does this regular season, week in, week out, you know you're going to have a tough game pretty much every week. You're going to play against some of the best teams in the country. How does that help in terms of getting the kids that you want at Christopher Newport, getting the kids who want to play the best competition?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I first got here as an assistant, we were actually an independent for a couple of years. So, you know, I think it was my second year, we actually made the tournament as an independent. We ended up playing Stevenson in the first round. But since we joined the CAC, it's just made for, you know, a much more competitive schedule. And you have some consistency within your schedule, which is really nice. And, you know, with us as a program, when you know that you have Salisbury and York in your conference, you know, one of my jobs as a coach is basically to go out and schedule, you know, the best possible teams that are willing to play us. I mean, we're in a situation right now where, you know, if we don't win the conference tournament, or, you know, even if we don't maybe make that final, even after having a great season, we're kind of right on that bubble for maybe making the NCAA tournament. So it all comes back to scheduling and making sure that we're playing, you know, the best schedule that we can possibly play to give ourselves a chance at making the NCAA tournament, even if we don't win the conference. Winning the conference is obviously the ultimate goal, but we do realize that those are very, very strong teams, and we have to keep playing the strongest possible schedule that we can find.
There's not really much better motivation than that in terms of, hey, if we win this thing, we're in the NCAA tournament. This is what you dream of. If we lose it, our fate isn't necessarily in our hands. So I don't think you're going to have any problem getting your guys up to play this weekend, are you?
No, definitely not. And I think that that makes for a really fun end of the season. And, I've told our guys that this isn't something that needs to make them nervous and uptight. It just needs to be seen as a great opportunity, you know, at the end of a really, really great season. And, we just want to go out there and play and do all the things that we've been working on all year. But it's not like we have something to lose. But I think obviously all of our guys and our seniors in particular, you know, we give a last word speech before every game, gives the seniors just a chance to talk to the team and talk about their career and, you know, just how much they've seen the program change over the years and whatnot. And Matt Crist gave a really good one last week. And, you know, he knows what our goals are as a program and how we want to be a top 10 team, you know, in the near future. But, you know, as a senior, he stepped up and said, you know, that's great, and we want that as well. But I want this to be our year that we win the CAC championship. And I think that was great for everyone to hear, just from a guy that doesn't, you know, necessarily speak up a lot. And he's a guy that really sees the potential of this particular team. And, you know, he's just like, you know, let's do it this year. There's no reason we can't. We've played these teams pretty close. It's going to take a great effort. There's no doubt about that. And I can't speak, you know, highly enough of those programs, but I mean, it's anything can happen. I think that guys are going to be fired up to make a run at it.
That last word speech, where did you get that idea? Is that something you learned along the way? Maybe something at Virginia, or just kind of a way to give your seniors some ownership of this program?
Yeah, that's something that that Coach Sarzio did with the seniors at Virginia, and it was a really, really cool part of the program. You know, every Thursday before a Saturday game at the end of practice, we'd get around and a senior would talk for about 5 minutes just about kind of anything, what the program has meant to him, and shared a little bit about his own personal journey. And that was something that, you know, was one of the first things I brought, you know, even as an assistant, just because it was so cool. And our seniors have done a great job with it. And I think it's great for some of the freshmen to hear from those guys. And you know, those are guys that can remember their time as freshmen, and in the blink of an eye, now they're seniors, and they talk a little bit about their experience and the things that are really, really important to them at the end of the day. And that's not always going to be just wins and losses and championships, but it's going to be, you know, the practices and the time spent on the field and in the weight room, and all the relationships that they built along the way. So yeah, that's been a really cool thing.
How much has Coach Starja kind of shaped what you do as a head coach and kind of influenced your outlook on the game?
I would say a ton. I mean, I think he is one of the main reasons that I got into coaching after college. Just, you know, he's been such a great mentor to so many people. And, you know, as we learned in college at UVA, you know, there was a string of events there that were pretty tough for us to get through, and just his leadership. And, you know, he was kind of our rock through all that stuff. And it just made me realize, you know, that a coach, especially, you know, a high school coach or a college coach, for better or for worse, you know, has the ability to make a huge impact on kids' lives. And there's so many things that happen outside of the lacrosse field that are really hard. And just having a coach that's able to help you through some of that stuff is more important than anything, really. So I learned, you know, a lot in that regard from Coach Starzia, and he's been such a great mentor. He's come down probably four or five times, come to a couple of our games this year, and he loves coming down here to spend time with our guys. And, you know, he's obviously someone I can pick up the phone and call, whenever I have a question. So, yeah, he's been a big piece of my coaching career.
At the University of Virginia, you know, you've played in NCAA tournaments. You were an assistant coach the year that the Cavaliers won the national championship in 2011. How do you pass on to your guys now what that feels like? Do you talk about it? Do you share with them just kind of personally what it meant to you to play on that stage and coach on that stage, kind of as you build toward that with your team now?
Yeah, you know, I don't think I make too many specific remarks about kind of what that feels like and whatnot, but I think that just the overall culture of what it takes to get to that level is something that we tried to put in place early. And, you know, I think that you have to have that, you know, culture of winning and that culture of working hard and discipline and doing the right things. And then the winning starts to come. And, you know, as we've gotten more wins under our belt and as we've increased our strength of schedule and stuff like that, I mean, those guys know what it feels like to get big wins and to push those top teams now. So, I think that, you know, I'm cautious not to talk too much about, you know, making a Final Four and what that means and whatnot, because you don't want those seniors to feel like they're missing out if they didn't get there necessarily. I mean, like I said, those guys have done so much to get this program to where it is at today. You know, if I all of a sudden said, hey, we have to make a Final Four, we have to win a national championship because that's all that matters, you know, you don't want them leaving feeling shorthanded if they don't accomplish that. So some of those other things that we harp on a daily basis that are more controllable, we want those guys to feel good about all they've done to do that kind of stuff.
Coach, one final thing to leave everyone with. You already mentioned one thing, and that's the beach. But if you're talking to a student athlete, you know, a high school kid who's looking to continue his academic and playing career at Christopher Newport, what's the selling point? What are some of the things that you say when you're talking to these kids that this is why you're going to have a great experience here?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't know that the beach is appealing to many people as it is to me. You know, I drive pretty much 40 minutes back and forth to work every day just because I love the beach and I love the surf. And that's kind of what brought me here. But, you know, in terms of the school, it's come a long way. It's a beautiful campus. It's in a really cool location. And it's a great size. You know, it's 5,000. You know, you have smaller classes. You know, it's not a tiny private school, but it's a public school. And there's just a ton going on campus here. And we encourage our guys to get involved with stuff other than just lacrosse. But it's you know, we've got a really strong athletic department. I mentioned, you know, how well so many of our other teams have done. So it can be done here. There's just no question about it that it can be done. All of our other teams on campus that are a little bit more established have done such a great job. And, I feel like we're definitely on the right track. So, you know, it's a great atmosphere here. There's a lot of really, really good people, that have the, you know, the best interests of the students and student athletes at heart. And, yeah, we got a lot of momentum and, I'm really looking forward to just continuing to build here.
Coach, good luck to all your kids with exams this week, and also good luck this weekend against Mary Washington.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.